program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
And you're getting closer and closer and closer to the edge. And finally, right about the time the music changes and it goes that Space Odyssey thing, you know, it goes, bomb, bomb, bomb. Bam! Boom! You go out over the edge and the bottom falls out and all of a sudden you're a mile off the ground. And you're exposed to the most beautiful thing that I've ever seen in my life. You talk about breathtaking, it's incredible.
You know, Seekers, this is a time of year when most people start thinking about the future, but backwards little me just likes thinking about the past. Part of the past I wouldn't mind reliving is the night I played, what was it, 39 different versions of 2001. Well, hey, why don't we just relive that? But since we got a show following us now, I gotta keep it down to an hour, so why don't I just pick out the choicest bits? That was from that alternate take of the Aloha soundcheck. Oh, but this version is those two madmen, Ferrante and Teicher, with a little Arthur C. Clarke reading from his novel 2001.
Circled Saturn, waiting for a moment of destiny that might never come. In its making, the moon had been shattered, and the debris of its creation orbited still. Now the long wait was ending. On yet another world, intelligence had been born and was escaping from its planetary cradle. An ancient experiment was about to reach its climax. Those who had begun that experiment so long ago had not been men or even remotely human, but they were flesh and blood. And when they looked out across the deeps of space, they had felt awe and wonder and loneliness. As soon as they possessed the power, they set forth for the stars. In their explorations, they encountered life in many forms and watched the workings of evolution on a thousand worlds. They saw how often the first faint sparks of intelligence flickered and died in the cosmic night. And because in all the galaxy, they had found nothing more precious than mind, they encouraged it dawning everywhere. They became farmers in the fields of stars. They sowed, and sometimes they reaped. and sometimes dispassionately, they head to weed.
This is the Cambridge Buskers from their album Music Abbreviation 101. Thank you. that was Ray McVeigh and his orchestra getting pretty funky with those flutes. Oh, but if you want funky, check this out. As I can remember, this was a Dr. X band, EXX, with some real disco tarts on the cover. Oh, this is the totally soporific sound of the Ray Conniff Singers. Bye. Now let's get our highbrows good and low with the help of the Portsmouth Symphonia.
Thank you.
like we're going through a vein of live stuff right now, inspired by Elvis, of course. That was the Spurlow Band. Oh, a Christian band turned kind of secular, fell for the polyester side of the force. Oh, but they've got nothing on Jimmy Stewart, the Polka King.
Country Club has the pleasure of presenting the group voted number one in the nation for polka music, Jimmy Stewart and his orchestra.
But now for a real palate cleanser, the good doctors of the Lymph Node Institute. Jazz great Stan Kenton with his brass train wreck of an arrangement which he calls 2002 Zarathustra Visited. Yeah, one word. Thank you. Now it's time to wig out with a very toupeed Lenny D at his organ again. Where were you in 1978, where you may be sitting in the horn section of the J.J. Daniel Middle School Band? from 1977, the year before the J.J. Daniel band there. This is a star-spangled washboard band. Here we go with Arkansas Time Traveler.
So here it is, the Arkansas Time Traveler.
Not here, man.
here's a long stretch. Diodato, with his version, layered over with a little Arthur C. Clarke.
Such unmistakable signs as great gaps torn in the metal cobweb by the wasp-like blunderings of asteroids that must have smashed through it aeons ago. This was no longer a parking lot. It was a cosmic junk heap. He had missed its builders by ages, and with that realization, Bowman felt a sudden sinking of his heart. Though he had not known what to expect, at least he had hoped to meet some intelligence from the stars. Now, it seemed, he was too late. He had been caught in an ancient automatic trap set for some unknown purpose and still operating when its makers had long since passed away. It had swept him across the galaxy and dumped him, with how many others, in this celestial Sargasso, doomed soon to die when his air was exhausted. Well, it was unreasonable to expect more. Already he had seen wonders for which many men would have sacrificed their lives. He thought of his dead companions. He had no cause for complaint. Then he saw that the derelict spaceport was still sliding past him with undiminished speed. He was sweeping over its outlying suburbs. Its ragged edge went by and no longer partly eclipsed the stars. In a few more minutes, it had fallen behind. His fate did not lie here, but far ahead in the huge crimson sun towards which the spaceport was now unmistakably falling. Now there was only the red sun, filling the sky from side to side. He was so close that its surface was no longer frozen into immobility by sheer scale. There were luminous nodules moving to and fro, cyclones of ascending and descending gas, prominences slowly rocketing towards the heavens. Slowly? They must be rising at 1,000,000 miles an hour for their movement to be visible to his eye. He did not even attempt to grasp the scale of the inferno towards which he was descending. The immensities of Saturn and Jupiter had defeated him during Discovery's flyby in that solar system, now unknown mega miles away. But everything he saw here was 100 times larger still. He could do nothing but accept the images that were flooding into his mind, without attempting to interpret them. As that sea of fire expanded beneath him, Bowman should have known fear, but curiously enough, he now felt only a mild apprehension. It was not that his mind was benumbed with wonders. Logic told him that he must surely be under the protection of some controlling and almost omnipotent intelligence. He was now so close to the red sun that he would have been burned up in a moment if his radiation had not been held at bay by some invisible screen. And during his voyage, he had been subject to accelerations that should have crushed him instantly, yet he had felt nothing. If so much trouble had been taken to preserve him, there was still cause for hope. The space pod was now moving along a shallow arc, almost parallel to the surface of the star, but slowly descending towards it. And now, for the first time, Bowman became aware of sounds. There was a faint, continuous roar, broken from time to time by crackles like tearing paper or distant lightning. This could be only the feeblest echo of an unimaginable cacophony. The atmosphere surrounding him must be racked by concussions that would tear any material object to atoms. Yet he was protected from this shattering tumult as effectively as from the heat. though ridges of flame thousands of miles high were rising and slowly collapsing around him, he was completely insulated from all this violence. The energies of the star raved past him as if they were in another universe. The pod moved sedately through their mist, unbuffeted and unscorched. Roman's eyes, no longer hopelessly confused by the strangeness and grandeur of the scene, began to pick out details which must have been there before, but which he had not yet perceived. The surface of this star was no formless chaos. There was pattern here, as in everything that nature created. He noticed first the little whirlpools of gas, hardly no larger than Africa or Asia, that wandered over the surface of the star. Sometimes he could look directly down into one of them, to see darker, cooler regions far below. Curiously enough, there appeared to be no sunspots. Perhaps they were diseases peculiar to the star that shone on Earth. And there were occasional clouds, like wisps of smoke blown before a gale. Perhaps they were indeed smoke, but this sun was so cold that real fire could exist here. Chemical compounds could be born and could live for a few seconds before they were again ripped apart by the fiercer nuclear violence that surrounded them. The horizon was growing brighter, its color changing from gloomy red to yellow to blue to blistering violet. The white dwarf was coming up over the horizon, dragging its tidal wave of star stuff behind it. Bowman shielded his eyes from the intolerable glare of the little sun and focused on the troubled starscape, which its gravitational field was sucking skyward. Once he had seen a water spout moving across the face of the Caribbean, this tower of flame had almost the same shape. Only the scale was slightly different. For at its base, the column was probably wider than the planet Earth. And then, immediately beneath him, Bowman noticed something which he was surely new, since he could hardly have overlooked it if it had been there before. Moving across the ocean of glowing gas were myriads of bright bees. They shone with a pearly light which waxed and waned and appeared in a few seconds. And they were all traveling in the same direction, like salmon moving upstream. Sometimes they weaved back and forth so that their paths intertwined, but they never touched. There were thousands of them, and the longer Bowman stared, the more convinced he became that their motion was purposeful. They were too far away for him to make out any details of their structure, that he could see them at all in this colossal panorama. Meant that they must be scores, perhaps hundreds, of miles across. If they were organized entities, they were leviathans indeed, built to match the scale of the world they inhabited. Perhaps they were only clouds of plasma, given temporary stability by some odd combination of natural forces, like the short-lived spheres of ball lightning that still puzzle terrestrial scientists.
This is Paul Ferrey and his Jamaican steel drum band wrapping it up for us here on Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. Oh, so let's all try to survive another year, Seekers. Even if only to annoy the hell out of them.